Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, I became finally pregnant in 2018, and I'm now finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. This season of the Finally Pregnant podcast is sponsored by Tomorrow Life Sciences. Ever wondered how and where your frozen eggs and embryos are stored? They are kept in tanks called dewars. Inside each tank, hundreds of eggs and embryos are submerged in liquid nitrogen. They're identified with tiny handwritten or printed labels, and the clinic manages and monitors them manually. This part of the IVF lab hasn't been updated in decades and also hasn't benefited from technology or innovation. That's where life sciences company Tomorrow comes in. Tomorrow has created the world's first and only automated platform for the management, identification, and storage of frozen human eggs and embryos. What does this mean? Tomorrow's technology replaces handwritten labels with sophisticated digital tracking, which creates an unbreakable digital link between the specimens and the patient. It also automates a huge part of the process, vastly reducing the risk of mistakes and human error. Finally, it monitors the safety of those frozen eggs and embryos 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Tomorrow's state-of-the-art technology gives patients and clinics peace of mind that those precious, irreplaceable frozen eggs and embryos are safe and protected. Tomorrow is being rapidly adopted by a host of clinics across the United States, creating a new and improved standard of care, and will be available in clinics in the UK this year. To find out more, visit tmrw.org. Links in the show notes. Hello there. How are you doing? Did you listen to last week's episode about racism in fertility, pregnancy, and beyond? I really genuinely hope so. And I hope if you did, that you got lots from it. I would love to hear from you if you have listened, or perhaps if you haven't listened to it, maybe you could let me know why. I completely appreciate that it's not an easy subject, but if you have any queries or questions you want me to answer before you go in, please know I am here. Right now, I'm sat in my new office, which is very exciting, although there is a plane going overhead, so I hope you can't hear that. We had a move around over the last few weeks in our house, something we've been meaning to do for ages, to be honest. But Ren is now in the bigger room, which means I can take over the small one as an office. And it's the first time I've ever had an office. Woo woo! Who am I kidding? There are also like two sets of drawers in here with Ren and mine clothes, like bags of clothes that we haven't sorted out and all of that stuff, you know, but it's my office. I will take it. It feels good. At the time of recording, I'm also planning Ren's third birthday because it's Wednesday today and her birthday is on Friday. We're having a day, just the three of us, on her actual birthday. And then on the Saturday, we have a couple of parties. A couple of parties, I hear you say. Yes, yes. Sometimes I don't think I help myself. But the reason being is that we were always having a family party. So that's kind of the afternoon. And I was going to get a bouncy castle for that. Although, having seen Ren not use the bouncy castle at a recent village event, I am wondering if it was a sensible idea or a complete waste of money potentially. But other people were using it, so it's all good. But then a couple of weeks ago, I said to, oh no, I think she said to me, are my friends coming to my birthday, mummy? And it was a conversation that me and Bob were supposed to have several weeks ago, whether or not we were going to do anything else. And that kind of answered it because we haven't really got round to talking about it. So, you know, her asking made the decision. So we have invited, I think it's only about 10 or so little ones, mostly from our village and a few kind of outsiders. You're clearly not an outsider if you're listening to this. You know that you're not. But yes, so we have invited them. So they're coming for a birthday brunch. lunch between 10 and 11:30. And the idea is croissants and fruit, and I might make some banana pancakes and or buy a banana loaf, you know, that kind of thing. Maybe a Bucks Fizz for the adults. I don't know. We'll see how we go. But nothing major, bit of bouncy castle action. I'm doing very small party bags with just a pencil and a rubber on. I don't know if you want to know all of this. I'll probably share a bit more on Instagram, but I'll finish this just because I started. A pencil and a rubber and a little wooden kind of toy, which I picked up from Tesco's, actually. I'm not a big fan of balloons, you know, like the silicone and the rubber. I have got Ren kind of one big bunch of balloons with a unicorn with a rainbow, which is kind of what she wanted for her theme. Well, it was actually a rainbow and ponies because she's getting into My Little Ponies, but they only had a unicorn at the shop. So we went with that. But yeah, so I have got one big set of balloons with a three on it, but I don't do loads of balloons decoration wise. Do you know what I mean? What I've been doing is, God, I've gone totally off on a tangent here. Sorry. What I've been doing is collecting, as we have different celebrations, kind of paper decorations. So I've got more and more of them. So that's great. So anyway, quickly, still on this, present wise, role play is massive for Ren right now. So we bought her a shop as recommended by one of you lovelies, actually. It's the Asda one, which apparently by all accounts has a moving conveyor belt. I can't even say that word. And a till with a scanner. We haven't put it together yet. So I can't confirm or deny as to whether or not we like it right now, but fingers crossed, I think it's going to be amazing. And Bob's mum has bought her a trampoline because she is mad on a trampoline at the moment. So we got a plum one that was on offer, actually. I will link to both of those items in the show notes, but head over to Instagram where I will no doubt be sharing more. Right. The reason you've come here, today's episode is a chat with the lovely Lisa Penny, aka Fertilityism. Lisa is a qualified nutrition coach who specializes in women's health and fertility. Through her own experiences, she has a deep understanding and knowledge of boosting fertility naturally with foods to nourish our bodies and why it matters. I have to say that I really love Lisa's philosophy, which centers on nourishment from within. And I am definitely all about that. Her work isn't the reason we're chatting, though. Lisa is a mum to 2-year-old Milo already, and she is finally pregnant right now. Unfortunately, they did experience a natural loss in between having Milo and being pregnant now. And they then went on to have IVF treatment, which has resulted in this pregnancy, which is amazing. Today's chat focuses on Lisa's experience of having an amniocentesis, which, if you haven't heard of that before, is an invasive test you may be offered during pregnancy to check if your baby has a genetic or chromosomal condition. As you'll hear, this is something we explored when pregnant with Ren. And when I was researching more information about having an amnio, I couldn't find that much about it. So I'm really, really honored that Lisa is sharing her story with us. And I hope it helps you if you have already or may experience this in the future, or simply because it's good to, you know lots of stuff and hear lots of experiences, whether it's for your own understanding or because you might support others. So yeah, I really, really hope that you get lots from our chat, and huge thanks to Lisa for sharing. Just before I go, please, please, if you could give me 2 minutes of your time, not even that, to head over and rate and review the podcast, that would be massively appreciated. Okie dokes. Thank you so much and take care. Bye-bye. Before we head into today's chat, I want to remind you just how important it can be to talk and share our stories with people who get it. That's just one of the reasons I created this very podcast. And you already know how important that is because you're here to listen to people whose experiences you relate to. But I want to give everyone the opportunity to talk, and that is just one of the reasons I launched The Hangout, a community specifically for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. When you join, you'll receive a free meditation, access to a 24/7 community, invitations to exclusive live podcast recordings with experts across all areas of pregnancy and parenting, a full and growing resource library, support groups, discounts, and more. Find out more at catstrawbridge.com. I look forward to seeing you there soon. Hi there, Lisa. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Kat?
Really well, and really excited that you joined me today. As I've said earlier on, you are a fertility nutrition coach, but it would be amazing for you to share a little bit about kind of your journey to being here, I guess, to being finally pregnant, if you would.
Thank you. Honestly, thank you so much for asking me to be part of the podcast. I've followed you for a long, long time, and it's honestly amazing. So, and I love what you do. So I am a fertility nutrition coach, and I got into what I do when I was trying to conceive my son Milo, who is almost three, very similar age to Ren. And he's almost three, I should say. And yeah, I specialize in helping women and couples who are trying to conceive, helping them, you know, boost their fertility in any way they can with, you know, nutrition, supplements, lifestyle advice. And I help them with that through conception to pregnancy and postpartum. So that's what I do.
Amazing. So that's incredible that, you know, this has come out of your own journey that you have, you know, obviously did so much research. Were you a nutritionist before you had a TTC journey?
No, I actually worked in private equity and found it massively stressful. So kind of ditched that. I'd always been into nutrition and decided to study it and undergo it when I was going through fertility treatment.
Oh, love that. And you have, as you said, your son Milo, who is almost three, and you are currently finally pregnant again, aren't you?
Yes, I'm 6 months or 24 weeks on Saturday.
Amazing. Oh, and 24 weeks is quite a big deal, isn't it, for all of us?
Oh, yeah.
Officially viable. That's it. Congratulations. That's wonderful news. Wonderful. So if you could tell us a little bit. So this is an IVF pregnancy, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And you've just recently had laryngitis. I'm just going to explain. So just in case there's any gaps, it's just a little drink of water or a little cough. But yeah, so you are 6 months pregnant. Can you talk to us? Like, how has it been?
Yeah, it's been, to be honest, my son was IVF as well. So I've gone through the whole IVF and then IVF pregnancy route before. But with this pregnancy, we were lucky. So from our round with Milo, we had three frozen embryos left in the freezer. We had those, and we actually felt pregnant naturally for the first time that had ever happened when Milo was about a year and 3 months, and we miscarried at 8 weeks. And we weren't really trying at that point. It was so strange that we even felt pregnant naturally because it had never happened in, you know, 3 years of trying for Milo. So then I thought, you know, well, it's happened once before, so we will try naturally for a year. It didn't happen, and I knew we had those frozen embryos in the freezer. So we did a double transfer in November last year, and so November 21. And I was very confident that it would all work because we did a double transfer with Milo and it was always him and we were only pregnant with him, and it didn't work. So then we had our last embryo, and then I actually found out post the failed test, 3 days later, I got COVID. So I was like, okay, this just wasn't meant to be. And I very much, you know, what's meant to be will be. So that was a bit of a kind of moment for me. And had a month break, and then I started preparing for the cycle over Christmas, which was a bit crazy. And my transfer was on the 5th of Jan this year. And I went with the flow and tried to be as positive as possible, but it was, you know, it was our least like graded embryo. And, you know, I was like, well, if a double embryo, if better quality embryos didn't work, how's this one going to work? But it worked. And yeah, and I'm here now and I'm pregnant. So yeah, it's all going well.
Amazing. And it just goes to show now, like for anyone who is new to the whole grading thing with embryos, like my understanding is that there isn't a grading, like a national or global grading system. So in our experience, we actually didn't ask for the grade. We didn't want to know. And what we did know was our embryos, the two blastocysts that we created in our final round of fresh IVF were the same grade, but we didn't know what that grade is. But it just goes to show, like you talking about grading, obviously that's within the same clinic. So, you know, they are relative to each other. That's a double embryo transfer, you know, better graded quality. You know, it just sometimes, and I know that this is really, really hard. Sometimes it is, there's no control. you know, yeah. And it's kind of meant to be. And, you know, especially for someone like you, who is like so into your nutrition, so into probably, you know, your kind of like your fitness and just movement and that kind of thing and stress and, or, you know, kind of awareness of and so on and so forth. You know, sometimes it just, and I think it's the most frustrating thing, or one of the most frustrating things about IVF, but it kind of is true, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. So I think that's great that you didn't find out your grading. And I definitely recommend more people to probably do that, because I did kind of stress about, oh God, what's even the point? And I did actually question the doctors about it. They were like, no, you never know. And yeah, so here we are. So my, yeah, out of the 5 blastocyst frozen embryos we had, we've had 1 successful Milo and now this one.
Amazing, wonderful. Now, you have been through a bit of a worrying time, like one thing in particular I'm thinking of, although I've just recently read a post about your placenta and having some concerns around that, but we'll come to that perhaps. But one of the things that I have spoken to you about that would be amazing to explore a little bit within our conversation is about the fact that you had an amniocentesis. Now, just to let people know, if you don't know, we looked at having an amnio, and the reason we looked at having it was because where we were expecting identical twins and we lost one of our twins, we couldn't then have any kind of further testing. And I do explain the reason why that, or a specialist actually explains the reason why that in an episode I did about testing, which I'll link to in the show notes. But we couldn't do that. And because we're a bit older, because it's IVF, because we've heard all of the stories, I was really worried about that and really wanted, you know, a piece of paper that said everything's going to be okay. And so we looked at an amniocentesis because the timing wasn't right for, I think it's called a CVS, which is something you can have earlier on. An amniocentesis is where they put a needle into, you know, kind of through your stomach into the amniotic sac and take a bit of the, is it the fluid rather than?
The amniotic fluid.
Yeah, out. And there are concerns, and I think that I remember it was a 1 in 100 chance of miscarriage if you do have it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a real way up, and we went in for, the way that it worked at our hospital was that we went in for the appointment, was a consultation about having an amnio, and we had a thorough anatomy scan of who we know now is Ren, found out then that she was a girl as well. And at the end of that, we could make the decision about whether or not we wanted to go ahead with the amnio. And, you know, like we went into a separate room, our hospital were amazing, discussed it and decided against it in that instant. There was no reason, you know, that there were no markers to suggest that anything was wrong. And so we decided actually, you know, as much as we wanted control over everything, there were some things we decided that we weren't going to risk because there was no reason to worry kind of at that point. So that's just a bit of background, you know, about that. We went in to explore it. But at the time, I hadn't known anyone who had had an amnio, and it was pure Googling that we were finding out. And there are horror stories out there. And like TripAdvisor, I always compare things to, there are horror stories and then there are really good reviews. So, you know, it's kind of like, and you have to read between the lines. But being someone who's had an amnio, would you mind sharing kind of why and what that process was like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I completely relate. Like, I didn't know anyone that had one either. So I did a lot of the kind of TripAdvisor research too. So I had a Harmony test done at 10 and a half weeks, and I did it with Milo. And I think when you go through an IVF pregnancy, you kind of just want to make sure that obviously everything's okay with the baby. And everyone says, you know, all I want to a healthy baby. So we did the Harmony at the same clinic that we did it with Milo. And obviously with the Harmony test, they take your bloods and they do a scan. So then you get the results back within a week or two. So they normally email you the results, and I had like 3 or 4 missed calls. I was driving at the time. I thought, why? And it was an 0207 number. And I was like, I'm sure that's the clinic. So I knew something was a bit strange because they said they'd email it to me. And with Milo, they'd emailed me that the results were fine. So they called me and said, look, we've got your Harmony results back. Everything's come back in terms of the baby hasn't got Down syndrome or, you know, any of the main things that could flag up on the Harmony. However, there's a chance that the baby's got a rare genetic chromosomal abnormality. So, and it's gender related. So we were like, I was on my own at the time, I wasn't with my partner, but they said, you know, it's hard because it could be a skewed result. It could not be. The only way we can know for sure is if you either have a CVS or an amniocentesis. So I was like, okay. So they had to tell us the gender. I've not revealed the gender we're having yet, but they said, you know, it could lead to infertility. It's kind of a broad spectrum genetic abnormality. So, you know, your child could have it and have very little symptoms, or they could have it and be, you know, kind of really struggle with learning and behavioral issues. And infertility is definitely something that they'll struggle with. What else did they say as different side? But they kind of went through all of this and they said, well, the professor's in tomorrow, so you can come and meet him and he'll advise whether we do the CVS, which you can have done at 11, 12 weeks, or you have to have the amniocentesis, which you'll have to wait for 16 weeks. So we kind of went along to the appointment the next day, and quite positive, because I just, you know, I think when you have children, you don't know what behavioural issues they're going to have. And the infertility thing didn't pass out because we've gone through IVF treatment ourselves. So in the appointment, the doctor said there's no point doing a CVS because the result is rare. However, he said it's 60% accurate, 40% not. So, you know, I recommend you having the amniocentesis because then we know 100% whether the baby has got this abnormality or not. And the reason he said not to have the CVS is because with a CVS, they take the sample from the placenta, and the placenta could have been skewing the results. So when they take the blood from the Harmony, obviously the baby's blood is such a small amount that it passes through the baby, through the placenta into the mum's bloodstream. So if we take the CVS sample, the placenta could be the thing that's actually skewing this result. So we could be taking an incorrect sample and not getting the correct result. If we do the amniocentesis, which we have to wait to 16 weeks, we 100% know, because that as you explained, the amniotic fluid is coming from the baby. It is actually the baby's DNA. So, you know, we 100% can rule out if they've got it or not. So we said, okay, great, we'll do that. Then we were kind of faced with, you know, he asked us what research we'd done on this abnormality. And, you know, we said, well, we haven't done much. We only found out yesterday and we just met you today. And he said, well, he was very, I suppose he'd gone off his own personal experiences. He said, well, I've had, you know, a colleague whose child had this and it was very bad. Like, in terms, he said, I meet with a lot of patients who decide to have Down syndrome children if they find out on a Harmony, because, you know, Down syndrome children can be very kind and very loving and affectionate and have all these, you know, lovely characteristics. He said, however, if, you know, you have a child who's got this abnormality and they have it on a very, you know, high spectrum, you know, they could be a bit of a social outcast, really struggle to have friendships, be infertile. And he kind of spoke very negatively about it. And I knew nothing about this chromosomal abnormality. And, you know, they could be transgender. It was all of this. And he was kind of advising us that we should maybe think about terminating the pregnancy. So when a professor says that to you, you're kind of like, okay, maybe this is something I should weigh up, which really messed with our heads, really. So for kind of from weeks 11 and a half to week 16, when we had to wait for the amnio, it was a bit of a crazy time, because we were kind of in this no man's land. We were like, well, we don't know if the baby's got it or not. It's a 60-40 chance. And you kind of take your odds with it, right? You think, wow, there's a 40% chance it could be wrong. However, there's a 60% chance it could be right. So we kind of went through the motions of, you know, weighing it all up and researching the abnormality and connecting with people that have it later in life, they found out. So that was amazing. I joined a few community networks and Facebook groups on it. And we spoke with a genetic consultant who explained the condition more. And we kind of really got our heads around it within those 5 weeks that, okay, if the baby has got this, we're going to keep the baby. We're not going to go down a termination route. However, I did meet with another professor who advised me that I should have the CVS. She basically told me a lot of different information to the other clinic, which was incredibly confusing. She said I should have the CVS and I could have an amniocentesis at 15 weeks. So that was very confusing, because I think I went and saw her about 13 weeks for a second opinion. And then I went back to the original clinic and they said, there's no way you have an amniocentesis at 15 weeks. It has to be at 16 weeks, because the baby's, you know, amniotic fluid and the baby's DNA isn't as developed at 15 weeks as it is 16 weeks. And because it's an invasive procedure, we advise that, you know, we don't want you to have to undergo it twice, and we want the results to be 100% accurate. So the actual TDL lab, the doctor's lab on Harley Street, called me, one of the scientists there, and explained to me why it should be done at 15 weeks, not 16 weeks. So that was quite frustrating, because I thought I could have it done a week earlier. And even though it was only a week at that point, I really wanted to know what was going on. So in terms of the amnio, I went in. My husband got COVID, which was rather annoying because he couldn't come in with me, but my lovely mother did. And I was very scared when I went in. Obviously, you know, that one in 100 risk, kind of didn't think much about it. And then when you're actually undergoing it, you kind of overthink things. And, you know, we wanted to know what the result was. So we did it. I did it. And they did a full kind of scan first because I was 16 weeks. So the baby was obviously very well developed. So they checked everything, and everything with the baby structurally was fine. And then they actually scan you whilst they do the amniocentesis. So they are checking that the baby's not moving too much, because if the baby moves too much, obviously they could pierce something in a wrong place. So you kind of have, to be honest, with anything IVF or blood tests or anything related, I just close my eyes and I'm like, wake me up when it's over, you know, it's fine. So they did the amnio, and it was, you know, it probably lasted around 2 to 3 minutes, and it was really uncomfortable. But she talked me through what she was doing at the time. And at the end, I was like, can you get it out now? Is it finished? But it was just uncomfortable. It was nothing like, it wasn't painful or anything like that. And she said, oh, the baby was very well behaved. It didn't move around much. And we've got everything we need. And then she actually showed me the fluid afterwards, which was pretty incredible looking at that, thinking, oh, my God, that's my baby's DNA. And that's come from the baby. And it's just, you know, mind blowing. So they sent that off, and they said it could take 3 to 5 working days. I had it done when I was exactly 16 weeks, which was on a Saturday, and they actually called me on the Tuesday morning with the results. So it was kind of, you know, a day and a half working day, and they said the result was abnormal. So it was either the placenta or just a complete, you know, anomaly, and that the baby was completely healthy and fine, didn't have any rare genetic chromosome abnormality. So for us, you know, the amniocentesis was, we did debate, and my partner did say to me, he said, you know, maybe we just wait and get, you know, have the blood test done when the baby's here. But I'm so glad we did it, because now, you know, straight away afterwards, it just felt like this huge weight had been lifted. And we wanted to know whether or not, either if the baby had it, we were like, okay, we want to know, and we can prepare mentally. And, you know, the genetic consultant had said, come back to us, and, you know, we can talk to you more about when the baby's born and tests we do. And, you know, there's a lot they offer to help you if you find out at birth with these things, with the child growing up. So it's just one of those things, we wanted to know whether our baby had it or not. So the amniocentesis was, I was so glad afterwards that I had it done.
Gosh, like, what an experience. And for you, like, you know, the amnio is, I don't want to say a small part. It's not, you know, relatively speaking, it's a small part. But like, for me, when you were talking about that, the weight.
Yeah, that would
have been that,
worst bit. The weight was the worst bit, like the 5.5 weeks. I wish I could have gone in and had it done, because then I wouldn't have overthought it. You know, the more time you have to overthink something, you think about all these things and the one in 100 risk and all of that. It was the weight that was the hardest bit. The actual amnio, it was over in a few minutes, and I was like, okay, the result is what it is. So yeah, but at the time, you know, I did a lot of, like you said, I did a lot of research as to whether to do it, or was I being silly, kind of, you know, doing it and risking, you know, that one in 100 with a miscarriage. But, you know, even when I went in, the doctor was like, you know, it's very low chance, and she completely put me at ease. And, you know, it's a very simple, quick procedure.
Brilliant. Thank you. And just for anyone, I don't think I said this earlier, I think my concern was that the amniotic sac would burst, you know, when they kind of went in with the needle. But actually, the concern, and if this is something that is affecting you and you're exploring, please, please do ask medical professionals, because I am not this. So yeah. I'm just relaying information that I read kind of several, or, you know, and heard from medical professionals, but a good few years ago now. But the concern, the risk actually comes with infection, ultimately kind of the wound, or if anything from the needle, you know, God forbid the needle was dirty, that had brought any bacteria or anything into the pregnancy. So it's not just like almost like a balloon popping was my worry. But then actually when you talk to medical professionals, they explain to you what the risks are.
Yeah.
And also my doctor, when he talked us through it, like, he talked about all the things at a hospital that they do to mitigate the risk as well, which really helped to put us at ease. So, but that's really interesting for you to say, you know, like, it wasn't painful. It was more that it was like physically kind of, it was just quite uncomfortable, as well as the emotional kind of.
Yeah, I'd say it's more emotional, you know, and then you're worried about the result afterwards. And actually after the procedure, the doctor said to me, because we were in London for the day, and I live in Oxfordshire, and I was with my mum. She was like, oh, what are you girls going to do for the rest of the day? And she was so lovely. And I said, oh, I might do a bit of shopping. She went, okay, well, just make sure you take it easy. she actually advised me to have a drink. She went, you've had such a stressful pregnancy with it being IVF. And I had all the, you know, the IVF bruises at this point on my tummy as well with the clexane. And she said, you know, you deserve a nice drink. I went, oh, you don't get many doctors saying that. She went, oh, yeah, treat yourself to a glass of champagne. We didn't, because I actually felt a little bit tired afterwards. But I thought, that's brilliant. Like, she did help me relax by just even a doctor saying that.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes a little bit of what you fancy.
I said, oh, really? She said, yeah, you can have one a week. You're fine. And, you know, so.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, gosh. Well, I am glad that you are out the end of that. And as you said, you had kind of made the decision one way or the other. You knew where you were. But having the unknown, and that comes back to the control thing that I know a lot of IVF kind of patients and people who are pregnant after IVF feel, you know, having that understanding and the answers, so you felt more in control of kind of what was happening with your pregnancy. That must have just, I can imagine, yeah, that must have been incredible.
Yeah, it felt great. It felt great. So, yeah, you know, that whole first trimester as well, my clinic, very thorough. I was at ARGC, and I was, you know, from every day of finding out I was pregnant till having a heartbeat, I was in there every other day having my HCG monitored. And then I was in week 6 to week 12 having a heartbeat. So for me, you know, and I think as women, like you say, it's very much a control thing. So I did want to know, and you do feel, I think, you know, it does help mentally.
Yeah. Absolutely. Next, I would love to ask you about traveling, because I know that you have, this sounds very, but I think everyone's packing the holidays in, but I know that you've been away a couple of times during your pregnancy, and that can be a concern. And this isn't something we talked about before, so you might not be prepared for this, sorry. But just, you know, like, it's really good that you are comfortable with traveling. Like, do you have any concerns with, other than like COVID, you know, as an obvious concern that everyone is feeling right now, like, you're happy to travel, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I get asked by, you know, a lot of people on my Instagram and clients on travel. And for me, because I've gone through a miscarriage in the first trimester and been monitored very closely with a clinic in the first trimester, I wouldn't recommend, and the clinic have always said to me, don't go away in the first trimester. I always advise not to go away in those first 12 weeks. But, you know, I think once you're kind of in that safe zone, and especially, you know, or safe zone, I should say, I think, you know, when you get to the second trimester, you know, I don't want to feel like I can't do things. And so we traveled and went away with, when I was pregnant with Milo at 17 weeks, we went to Dubai and we had a lovely trip. And we went to Seville when I was about 26 weeks pregnant. So this time around, I was desperate for a holiday because we hadn't gone away from the following summer. And then I'd had the failed IVF Christmas. And so we actually had booked to go away when I was 15 weeks, but then I had the amnio. So we changed our flights and we were like, do you know what? We'll go when I'm, so 17 weeks. And we were like, it is what it, and actually, do you know what? It was a nice sweetener, because I was like, whatever the verdict is, I'm going on a nice holiday afterwards with my boys. You know, with the whole COVID thing, I feel like you can catch COVID going to your local supermarket. And I've caught COVID twice from just being around at home and not traveling. So that didn't concern me. And, you know, yeah, I just think when you're in the second trimester, it's the nice thing to do. And I've kind of not overthought it.
Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. And because, you know, I think that we do, you know, we want to, like, going back to that control thing and going back to not changing everything. But sometimes, like, going back to the what you fancy, sometimes like a week in the sun is, or wherever you want, is exactly what you need. And especially because for so many people, you know, we haven't been able to go anywhere for so long. And this might be your last opportunity for a while, because people might not want to travel with little babies, or, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think that's really nice to have that kind of relaxed attitude towards it. As you say, maybe not in the first trimester. And do speak again, like, just refer back. Do speak to your clinic. Do speak to, you know, kind of your healthcare professionals through your pregnancy about that, you know, because everyone is different. But yeah, just really nice to have that and to get away. I'd say that, like, desperate to go away myself. We had to move our holiday, so we are going away in a couple of weeks. I can't wait. It's the first time since Ren was 3 months, like, kind of pre-COVID. I can't wait. So I am in a little bit of a, yeah, just do it.
Oh, I was like, do you know what? I've done 2 IVF cycles. I've had a crazy 16 weeks of pregnancy. Like, I just need to go on a holiday. And it was lovely.
Brilliant. I mentioned earlier on about you have posted recently about an issue, I don't know if you want to call it that, but a concern perhaps about your placenta. So I wonder if you can share, because you had placenta previa or previa, I never know which one it is,
yeah.
in your previous pregnancy, but this time, yeah. So that means that your placenta is quite low down. Is it kind of potentially covering your cervix, whereas this time it's actually quite high up?
Yes, so my pregnancy with Milo, from my 20-week scan, the placenta was low-lying, and the placenta is low-lying and it doesn't move. They will do a cesarean and book you in, because it's obviously a risk if the placenta delivers first and then gets anyway disconnected from the baby. So they have to obviously do the C-section to have everything on the safe side. But I actually got bleeding around 36 weeks. Well, I had bleeding around 33 weeks related to my placenta with Milo, and then at 36 weeks, I had to have an emergency C-section because I had a lot of bleeding at home, and had a whole ambulance pick me up and take me to the hospital and my husband meet me there. So with Milo, to be honest, despite that though, it was a very positive experience, and you know, very grateful for the experience I had. And even it being an emergency C-section, I recovered well. This time round, they do say with placenta previa that it's very common, if you've had that before, that you will have it in ongoing pregnancies. So I kind of had prepared myself, and, you know, we'd kind of gone through the worst kind of case with it first time round. So I felt fine about it. And then on my scans, you know, 12, 16 and 20 weeks, they said, oh, there's no concern with the placenta. Actually, on my 20, I paid for a private like 20 week scan with an obstetrician that specialised in placentas, just because I was a bit concerned about it. And they said, you know, they did an internal scan as well as like on the tummy, and said, you know, your placenta's fine, it's not a problem. However, I had an NHS scan. It was meant to be my 20-week one, but it got pushed back. So I got it done when I was 23 or 22 and a half weeks. And they are concerned now that the placenta is too high because they couldn't actually see it on the scan. And then the risk with that, I think it's called, I don't know how to pronounce it, placenta accreta, A-C-C-R-E-T-A. And the concern with that, if it's too high and you've had a C-section previously, is that the placenta can attach to your C-section scar and the uterine wall. So although it's not a concern for the baby, it can be dangerous for the mum, because they can't just kind of pull the placenta off from, you know, the C-section scar. If it attaches, it can cause a lot of bleeding, it can cause hemorrhaging and blood transfusions and all these things. I'm trying not to read up too much about it, but they've said that I have to go back at 28 weeks and check, because obviously the placenta can move so much, right, between, you know, any time in the second trimester and even in the third trimester. So they kind of want to check that if it has moved or if it's still high. So I will be down for a C-section if that's the case as well.
gosh. So if it's high, then you would have a C-section. That would almost be the kind of remedy for that, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think even the C-section, it's a bit more of a complicated situation. I try not to overread things because I overthink. But yeah, it's obviously, you think they're going to cut in and the placenta's going to be there, so they're going to not want to cut into the placenta, and it's all, everything becomes a bit more high risk. And I think it can cause bleeding in pregnancy, like in the third trimester with the placenta. So I don't know. It's just one of those things that I'm keeping my fingers crossed that hopefully it will move. But if it doesn't, you know, I know they'll keep a good eye on me and they'll book me in, and, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like just before you said that, I was thinking fingers crossed that it does all, you know, kind of move. And it goes to show, like, I just think like there's two or three things there really, I guess. Like, firstly, it goes to show how every pregnancy is different, you know. Absolutely. And even if you do have a condition, if I can call it that, you know, such as placenta previa, or, you know, and that would suggest that you would get that again, you know, it's not always the case. One of the other things is that placentas do move. So if you are concerned about that, then, you know, just be aware, because I know that people who are finally pregnant, like, we don't look at pregnancy, do we, until we're there, and then we're like, ah. So if this is your first time hearing anything about a placenta, then, you know, it does move during the pregnancy.
And a lot.
Finally, you know, kind of within that bit that you just talked about there, like, again, your attitude, like not falling down that Google rabbit hole, like listening to your medical. Oh, there is nothing worse, is there? You know, like just listening to your medical professionals, perhaps. And this might be one of the answers to the next question I've got for you, you know, like booking in those extra scans. And you talked earlier on about getting a second opinion, although, you know, for something for the amnio, which wasn't necessarily the best one, as it turns out. But, you know, that is totally open to you. So, yeah, that's
I always advise to, you know, clients and any women I'm connecting with that, you know, I think waiting 12 weeks, for example, for a scan from that positive pregnancy test into 12 weeks, such a long time. And so many people are like, oh my God, I'm finally pregnant now. And wow, like, I didn't think about what it was going to be like when I actually turned pregnant, but I feel like you enjoy it for like a few hours and then you're like, oh my God, but what if something goes, and your mind automatically starts racing. So I always think, you know, it's great to kind of have a 8-week scan just to check that everything's, you know, that the heartbeat's there and that everything's progressing well, because, you know, it is quite a long time to wait from finding out you're pregnant to 12 weeks.
Exactly. God, oh my gosh. It's like, yeah. Like people often say, don't they, as well, like the 2-week wait after the 2-week wait. You know, like, so that you can have an initial viability scan. It's just like, that's a 2-week wait that no one talks about, because it's hell. You are pregnant, or you think you're pregnant, or, you know, that all the signs are telling you that, but is it in the right place? Is it, you know, all of those things. Is there going to be a heartbeat? Oh, it's just terrifying, terrifying.
I cried before going into my scan this time around, before the first heartbeat, and just the nervousness of it all.
I think I cried before every single one of my scans. Especially that first one, I was
a mess.
My
husband wasn't allowed in with me, so one of the nurses came in with me and held my hand.
That is nice. Gosh, that's a whole other experience, isn't it? But but fortunately, we are majority of the way through that, and I hope that partners are able to join people, you know, kind of for scans and that kind of thing. Now, can I just kind of round up the conversation really with, you know, like, other than going and getting a scan, assuming one can afford it and that kind of thing, you know, like, get that reassurance. Like, I was in the scan camp. We had, was it 10 within the first 16 weeks? So obviously there were complications because of twin and, you know, that kind of thing. So that did skew it a little bit, but still, I'm like, go for it. If you can, why not do it? What other tips could you give to people who are finally pregnant after going through fertility treatment, like, to enjoy it as much as possible?
Yeah, I think, you know, it can be really hard to like overthink things, like you say, and have that anxiousness. So having a scan, if you're feeling that way, I think it's really great. I think, you know, I get a lot of questions from a nutrition perspective about, you know, worrying, especially when they're feeling nauseous, maybe from like, you know, kind of week 6-7 to week, you know, even into the second trimester, like, all I'm doing is eating beige foods and I used to eat so well and healthy and I was eating so well pre-conception. And I think, you know, even stressing about that, like, the baby, someone said to me, like, when I was going through it first time round, you know, the baby will be getting the nutrients it needs from you. So, you know, try and add a bit of goodness in where you can. But so many of us go through the whole craving beige foods and feeling crap. And it's just a sign that your body's doing what it needs to do. And I mean, I went off every single vegetable and fruit and anything good for me. All I wanted was kind of, you know, like pasta and all those carbs. And, you know, you don't feel bad. I think sometimes we get into our heads and I think the feeling bad and the mind-body connection is such a strong one that if you feel bad and you're talking to yourself negatively, that's going to have an impact on how you're feeling. So try and, you know, dissociate from it and just go with the flow and know that it will hopefully pass. And, you know, if I think, especially if you're taking a good, for example, good quality folic acid supplement, especially for the first 12 weeks, you know, your baby's getting that goodness in from the supplement as well. So just go easy on yourself, I suppose. And I think in the first trimester, try not to overplan things, try to just take it easy. And, you know, as women, I think we're used to racing about and wanting to do everything and multitask and be great at work, you know, doing our work. We take a lot on. So I think, you know, prioritize yourself more, relax at the weekends a bit, try and get good quality night's sleep and just, you know, listen to your body. If you need a nap in the afternoon, do it. Just, you're actually growing a tiny human, which is absolutely amazing. So give yourself credit.
It's a miracle, isn't it? However it happens, it is a complete miracle. But for those of us, yeah, who have been through a journey to get there, it's just so special. And absolutely, as you say, look after yourself, listen to yourself, and try not to be too hard on yourself as well. Definitely. Amazing. There is so much more we could cover, Lisa, but I'm just, I really, really appreciate you talking about those parts in particular of your pregnancy with the amnio and the placenta and just, yeah, all of the links will be in the show notes. But if you just want to share your Instagram.
Yeah, it's ISM. So fertility and then ISM, fertilityism.
wonderful stuff. And there'll be a link to your website and everything in the show notes too. So anyone wants to go over and say hi, then please, please do. Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And honestly, I love what you do, Kat. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. I will speak to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.